is the short lineage, which is directly from the great mother Prajnaparamita Ma. And his represents above all things, I think, the confluence of the practice yogic tradition and the scholarly tradition, and sort of shows once and for all that those two can be fully integrated, and that one doesn't need to be at the expense of the other, and that both really produce such a marvelous person by vast studies as well as profound practice. So that's all I'm going to say. I'm going to say thank you.
I've been here to this university several times in the past, and to come again today and to be able to see you all here makes me very happy. Our topic today is to look at the connection between the view of the text called the Gyulama, the treatise on Buddha nature, and the view of the Vajrayana. The Gyulama describes the Buddha nature by first giving the three reasons why it is that all sentient beings possess the Buddha nature, and explaining it by in more detail by describing its 10 aspects, and finally giving 9 examples for how it is that the Buddha nature exists at the same time it is covered over by adventitious stains. And I know that you've all studied this text thoroughly here in class, so there's no need for me to go into it anew. And your teacher, Sarah Harding, has studied this text very well, so she knows its view, and she's also done practice in a Vajrayana retreat, and so she knows the connection between the view of the Gyulama and the view of the Vajrayana, and she can explain it to you very well. She practiced in that retreat for 3 years and 3 fortnights, the view of Ma Mudra and the practice of the 6 dharmas of Naropa. So she knows the Vajrayana view and practice very well. So therefore there's no doubt that she can very capably explain this topic to you, but it is what is on the schedule and for me here today, so I will try to give you a brief overview of it.
According
to the Mahayana, And this view of the Buddha nature, it is that the true nature of mind is luminous clarity. And this, in its essence, is free from any stain. It is perfectly pure. And in the land of snows, the yogi who realized this to the greatest extent, the one from whom among all of the countless great practitioners was like their king, the one who is called the Lord of Yogis, is Milarepa. And so it would be good to explain this view in connection with one of Milarepa's songs of realization. Just in order to obtain the practice instructions, Milarepa had to undergo a great deal of difficulty and to do many difficult tasks. And after completing them successfully, he received the teachings in a completely perfect way. And he then immediately went to practice. He went first to a cave called Tanya Lungten Puk, and he practiced there for 11 months, day and night, with a candle perched on top of his head so he wouldn't fall over. And he went on to practice in 6 outer fortresses, 6 inner fortresses, 6 secret fortresses, and 2 other fortresses. He practiced in 4 well-known caves and 4 not-so-well-known caves, spent his whole life in retreat. And as a result of that, he sang songs of realization that were not just songs based on something he'd heard or thought about, but rather they are described as songs that were flowing out of the wisdom arising from meditation that was just gushing out of him. He sang these spontaneous songs of realization. And therefore, for those interested in learning about Vajrayana, Milarepa's songs are very important.
Tena dorje tepe tava te saje chimbore. Tena sa dorje tepe tha toga tava saje chimbo toba la. Tene thani sanje to motoba. Tene gongo malare ba ti jin jin ti tene mambo gongo.
The ultimate view of Vajrayana is the view of Mahamudra. And this is not a view that you can just come to understand and realize by looking at words alone. Rather, one has to meditate. And that's why Milarepa practiced so much. That's why he spent so much time in meditation.
Namto chuko trovarda rikshar deva ngangadda machu nyabar yabadda kuna.
And in one of his songs about the view, meditation, conduct, and fruition called The Three Nails, Milarepa sings about the three nails of meditation. To describe the nails that go with meditation, the three, all thoughts in being Dharmakaya are free. Awareness is luminous, in its depths is bliss, and resting without contrivance is equipoise. The true nature of thoughts, what thoughts actually are in their essence, is clarity and emptiness undifferentiable. And this clarity, emptiness, undifferentiable, that is the basic nature of what our thoughts are, is given the name Dharmakaya. And when Milarepa sings, all thoughts in being Dharmakaya are free, what that means is that if we meditate on the true nature of thoughts, Dharmakaya, then thoughts will be self-liberated within that. We meditate within the on the true nature of mind, and within that, thoughts are free. According to the explanation of the Gyulama, the treatise on Buddha nature, then the true nature of thoughts is also described to be luminous clarity. And this is also given the name Buddha nature. It is given the name Dharmakaya.
Rishar Devananga Da Somare. Jini Chukat Nandok Nelo Chukat Kane Do. Sena Chukat Rizha Rizilin Deyate Rangu Rangu Rikyo Ripata. Rangi Ji Vosar Vata. Jini Detonga Rangi, Deva Rangi Dendo Somare. Detonga Rangi Dendo Somare. Rangi Dendo Somare.
The next line Milarepa sings is, awareness is luminous, in its depths is bliss. So once we know that the true nature of thoughts is Dharmakaya, then the next question is, what's this Dharmakaya like? Well, Milarepa describes it as having three qualities. The first is that it's awareness. And this is awareness beyond there being something to be aware of, someone who is aware. It's beyond the duality of subject and object, and so it's called self-arisen, self-aware, original wisdom. Then the next is the quality of luminosity or clarity. And again, this is described as being the basic nature of the Dharmakaya. What the Dharmakaya is by nature is luminous. And finally, it is bliss. It is bliss and emptiness undifferentiable. And so Milarepa describes the Dharmakaya, the true nature of mind, as being awareness and emptiness undifferentiable, as being luminosity or clarity and emptiness undifferentiable, as being bliss and emptiness undifferentiable. And the view of the Gyulama, the treatise on Buddha nature, is that the true nature of mind, the Buddha nature, is awareness and emptiness undifferentiable, is clarity and emptiness undifferentiable. And then all you need to do to connect it with the Vajrayana is to bring in the description of bliss and emptiness undifferentiable. And this is the most profound way to describe the connection, the way that the view of the Gyulama makes a connection between sutra and mantra, is within these descriptions of the true nature of mind as awareness, clarity, and then bliss from the Vajrayana side, all undifferentiable from emptiness, and in fact, in their nature, there being no difference between these three. When the term luminosity, emptiness is used, then the luminosity is coming from the perspective of affirming what a positive quality, whereas emptiness is from the perspective of negating, saying what it is not. And so you put these two together and they are undifferentiable. And in fact, although in this explanation we get these two different perspectives of affirming and negating, in reality there's no difference. You can't separate them out, because whatever is of the nature of luminosity is by its, in its essence, emptiness. And also this emptiness is not just a mere vacuum, but it is emptiness meaning beyond all conceptual fabrications of what it might be. And that by nature is luminous. So although concepts can separate out these two different qualities of a luminosity and emptiness, in genuine reality, there's no difference at all. And for this reason as well, when we talk about awareness, awareness is also awareness and emptiness undifferentiable. And when describing awareness and emptiness undifferentiable, then when talking about, when singing about the emptiness aspect of this, Milarepa compares awareness to a sky that's completely free of clouds. And when he's talking about the awareness part, then he compares it to polished mirror's shine. So the verse that in which Milarepa describes original wisdom that knows the true nature of reality to be like a cloud-free sky, in that verse he sings, when you know the true nature of everything to be known, this wisdom that's aware of the true nature is like a cloud-free sky.
And
In the abiding nature of reality, there is nothing that we need, there's nothing that can be determined. There's nothing that can be ascertained. It's beyond being an object of ascertainment. It's beyond there being any knowing subject that could determine or ascertain it, beyond this duality. But our thoughts are mistaken about this. They don't understand it. And so we need to go through the analytical process of determining, of ascertaining its true nature. Because when our thoughts take things to be truly existent, they make the mistake of believing in the reality of duality when in fact there is none. And so we have to use reasonings that search for the nature of ultimate truth to gain certainty for ourselves in what the true nature of reality is. And the one whom the Buddha himself prophesied would come and show how to determine the true nature of reality in a way that freed one from clinging to any extreme view was the protector Nagarjuna. And in his text, The Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way, the Majjhimika Karika, he explains in 27 chapters why every single view, every single reason that anyone could put forward for why things truly exist is wrong. So it starts out in the first chapter with opponents putting forth some view of why things are truly existent, and then Nagarjuna refutes that view. Then they come up with another view, and Nagarjuna refutes that until he gets to the end of the views. It takes 27 chapters. But this is a model for how to analyze and use logical reasoning to determine the true nature of reality. On the other hand, we have the example of Milarepa, the Lord of Yogis, who received key practice instructions from his teacher Marpa the translator and used them to go into caves and determine the true nature of reality in a cave through putting these practice instructions into effect. He didn't study a lot of books. He didn't receive a lot of scholastic sort of education. But in his caves, he put Marpa's teachings into practice, and in this way, he determined the true nature of reality with certainty. So what he was looking at was the very present appearances that were appearing to him and his present state of mind. And what he determined about these appearances and this mind is that they have no base, no ground, no root or origin. And what's it like when with wisdom you can determine the true nature of appearance and mind? When you can know the true nature of everything to be known, what's that awareness like? Well, he uses an example to describe it, because for ordinary sentient beings, we don't have examples for something like this. It'd be very difficult for us to understand. And so he describes it as being like a cloud-free sky. This wisdom that's aware of the true nature is like a cloud-free sky. And therefore, the essence of original wisdom that knows the abiding nature of reality is emptiness. It's like a sky completely free of clouds. And then he described the clarity aspect, the luminosity aspect of this awareness by singing, "When the mud settles down and mind's river is crystal clear, self-arisen awareness is like a polished mirror's shine." When the mud settles down, the mud here refers to, in the movement of mind, concepts of perceived and perceiver. And these concepts that conceive of duality are obscurations, so they're compared to mud. But when they settle down, then what's left is mind that has the quality of clarity, purity. It has brilliance. And at the same time, a great variety of pure, empty forms are ready to manifest when mind is in that state of clarity and brilliance. And so that's why it's compared to the shine of a polished mirror. And the helpfulness of this to us is that Milarepa describes awareness emptiness in these steps by telling us in original wisdom that is the true nature of mind, what's the emptiness like? What's the awareness like? Because if he just said, or if somebody just says, mind is in its true nature awareness, emptiness, undifferentiable, and doesn't say any more, then it's very difficult to understand what that is. But by describing it in these stages, what is emptiness? What's it like? What's the luminosity like? Then we can understand what it's like when they're undifferentiable. And since the true nature of mind is clarity, emptiness, undifferentiable, since it is awareness, emptiness, undifferentiable, then it's also bliss and emptiness, undifferentiable. As Milarepa sang in a song called The Eight Kinds of Mastery, not separating bliss and emptiness. This is conduct as mastered as it can be. What does bliss and emptiness undifferentiable mean? It means that whatever is bliss is emptiness, and whatever is emptiness is bliss. So thoughts can, when thoughts look at these two different parts, then bliss means one thing to conceptual mind, and emptiness means something else. But from the perspective of genuine reality itself, there's no difference. Bliss and emptiness are undifferentiable. And since Milarepa describes the true nature of mind in this way, showing it how it has these three qualities of awareness and luminosity and bliss, then the connection between the view of the Vajrayana and the view of the Gyulama becomes clear. And since these are songs that just flowed out of Milarepa's realization that came from his wisdom from meditation, and since they so much bear the quality of that wisdom, then they are quite profound, and for this reason I have offered you a brief explanation of them. And at the same time, it would be good to look at some of the verses from a text that was composed by Panchen Shakya Chokten called Establishing the Two Traditions as One, that show the harmony in the intention between the views of, as explained by the protector Nagarjuna and the noble Asanga. And he describes, Shakya Chokten does, the view of a Sangha in the first verse on the back page. Clarity emptiness, mere awareness free of perceived and perceiver, is all phenomena's abiding reality. Knowing this and joining it with a limitless accumulation of merit, the fruition of the spontaneously present three kayas will manifest. This is a Sangha's tradition. According to a Sangha, the true nature of mind is clarity and emptiness undifferentiable, free from any duality of there being some perceived object and some perceiving subject. And this is not only the true nature of mind, this awareness, non-dual, is not only the true nature of mind, it's the ultimate true nature of everything there is. It's the true nature of all phenomena. And this is an explanation as well that the abiding reality of all phenomena is not just emptiness that is a total negation or a non-affirming negation. It's not just a mere emptiness, nor is it even just the mere freedom from all conceptual fabrications. It's not mere inconceivability either, but rather it is luminosity, emptiness, empty of the duality of the perceived and of the duality of perceived and perceiver. That is, this luminosity that is non-dual is the true nature of everything. To describe this in a way that's easy to understand, then it would be to say that the ultimate reality is the true nature of mind. And what's the reason for doing that? For describing the ultimate true nature of reality as being the true nature of mind? It is because when there is a lack of awareness of the true nature of mind, then that is ignorance. And when there is, on the other hand, awareness of its true nature in a way that's beyond all concept of what that awareness might be, then that is wisdom. And from that, a great variety of pure appearances are ready to manifest. And in the last verse on the back side of the page, we have the explanation of how a Sangha describes this very luminosity as the Buddha's intention in both the second and the third turnings of the Wheel of Dharma. So Shakya Chokden writes, "The noble Asanga explains that non-dual original wisdom, free from all fabrications, self-aware and self-illuminating, is the ultimate nature of genuine reality, the Buddha nature, and that this is the definitive meaning of both turnings of the wheel. The statement being made here is that luminous clarity, the Buddha nature, is in fact the subject of both the second and the third turnings of the wheel of Dharma. What both are really talking about. So how is that? Well, it is the explicit subject of the third turning of the wheel of Dharma, and although the explicit subject of the second turning of the wheel of Dharma is emptiness, then its implicit subject, what it's really talking about, is the Buddha nature. And this is the case about the second turning of the wheel of Dharma's teachings, because what the second turning of the wheel of Dharma is describing is how the Buddha nature is empty. So it negates the conceptual fabrications of existence and non-existence, of it being something or it being nothing. So it negates all conceptual fabrications about what reality might be. You can't describe it with any label. But what is this reality that is empty in this way? It's the Buddha nature. So please recite these two verses together, on the backside, the first and the last. Clarity, emptiness, mere awareness, free of perceived and perceiver, is all phenomena's abiding reality. Knowing this and joining it with a limitless accumulation of merit, the fruition of the spontaneously present three kayas will manifest. This is Asanga's tradition. The noble Asanga explains that non-dual original wisdom, free from all fabrications, self-aware and self-illuminating, is the ultimate nature of genuine reality, the Buddha nature, and that this is the definitive meaning of both turnings of the wheel. When the protector Nagarjuna describes the second turning of the wheel of Dharma's teachings and what they mean, then he does so by using logical reasonings in his text, The Fundamental Wisdom of the Middle Way and others, to negate all conceptual fabrications about what reality might be. Fabrications like thinking something exists, or that reality is non-existence, fabrications of there being something or there being nothing. He negates all of these fabrications and doesn't assert anything about reality in its place. And in this way, Nagarjuna helps us to dissolve all of the conceptual fabrications we have that try to label reality as being this or that, and shows that the genuine nature of reality is beyond these conceptually fabricated terms and labels. So from the perspective of helping us to understand reality's inconceivability, it is the supreme method that Nagarjuna describes. And the way that Nagarjuna does this is that whatever propositions those who believe in the true existence of things put forward to try to prove their position as valid, Nagarjuna negates one after the other. And it takes him 27 chapters to completely finish this. And so the way this works in the text is that those who believe that things truly exist actually say something to Nagarjuna. They put forward one of their reasons that try to prove that things are real, and Nagarjuna negates it. Then they come up with another reason, and he negates that one. And it goes on until he's finished negating them all at the end of the 27th chapter. If he didn't negate them all, then he wouldn't have completed his purpose, because then if there's still some reason that people believe proves true existence, that things are real, then you haven't yet proven that the true nature of reality is emptiness. So that's why Nagarjuna has to negate all reasons trying to prove that things truly exist. And by refuting successively each and every reason for why things have no inherent nature, then at the end, those who believe that things truly exist have no reason to believe that anymore. They have no reason to think things truly exist. And so then they assert that things are of the nature of emptiness. Since Nagarjuna himself, from the start of this, describes the third turning of the wheel of Dharma, the intention of the teachings in the Gyulama and also the praise of Dharma Dhatu and the Vajrayana, is described by Shakya Chokden in the second verse, which on the back side of the page, which says, to those skilled in the reasonings proving the nature of all phenomena is beyond fabrication, mind's expanse is explained to be genuine reality, the Vajra of mind. This is Nagarjuna's second tradition. In his text, The Praise of Dharma Dhatu, then Nagarjuna describes the Dharma Dhatu of the skandhas, the dhatus, and the ayatanas. And he describes this as being not just a non-affirming or total negation. It's not just the mere transcendence of all conceptual fabrications, but rather the Dharma Dhatu, the true nature of the aggregates and the sources of consciousness and the potentials, is luminous clarity. That's what it really is.
tene chhe te pandan nang de na pandan nang de manne che jan de pandan nang manne sa te ji ne kha che ne dene chhel tene pandan te la e kon kha che so ni kha che ne e kon kha che to ni tene ro de na de e kon kha che manne ne ro de sa de ne pandan te sa ma ne cha ya na tene pandan de मरने के लिए रोज़ संडे के लिए रांची करते हैं। तेना ये किन्हें थोंगान के लिए जितने जब काटे संडे में लोग ऐसे जितने आंधों मरे जब बार राखवा था ना तो उसे तुमरे ये जब बार तेना तुम्हें तीन तीन रोज़ तेना
And so in this text, Nagarjuna says that Dharma Dhatu means luminous clarity. That's what it is. And the example for how this Dharma Dhatu, or expanse of qualities, is the true nature of the mind of every single sentient being, he describes with the example of a lamp that's hidden under a vase. So if you have a candle that's burning, the light is there, but if it's surrounded by this vase, then nobody can see it. But if you poke a few holes in the vase, then the light of the candle that's always been there starts to shine. And if you completely obliterate the vase, so there's nothing left, then all you have is the luminosity. And in a similar way, the Dharma Dhatu, or the true nature of the mind, is this luminous clarity that's obscured from our view by the obscurations of ignorance. If we start to clear away some of the coarse obscurations, we see a little bit of that luminosity. The more and more we clear away, the more brightness we experience until there are no stains left at all and you have only the luminosity. That's enlightenment.
Dōtana tenji nēlō wēsar yīnīyāṁ tenji nēlō mātōpā tūpa tīmē tēnā tēnā wēsar yīnīyāṁ tūpa tīmā tēnā tēnā wēsar yīnīyāṁ
In short, Nagarjuna's explanation is that the true nature of mind is luminous clarity, but right now, for ordinary sentient beings, that's hidden behind the obscurations of confusion. If those obscurations are cleared away, then the luminous clarity that's always been there will manifest. And in another text he composed called The Praise of Vajra of Mind, then Nagarjuna uses the term, the Vajra of mind, to describe this luminous clarity as like another term to describe the Buddha nature, to describe luminous clarity. He calls it mind's Vajra. Vajra means something adamantine that cannot be destroyed, diminished, or changed in the slightest way. It is perfectly stable. And this is the same term to describe the true nature of mind that's used in the Vajrayana.
Dona sentye melo deshi nimbo sentye melo devon yemi de yemi ne sutta nirva nirva dosi dosi.
In short, the true nature of mind is luminous clarity, clarity emptiness, the Buddha nature, bliss and emptiness, and this bliss and emptiness is completely unchanging. It can't be affected by anything or diminished in the slightest way. And that's why it's called a vajra. And so that's why in the Vajrayana you have Vajra Dara and Vajra Sattva and He Vajra, and lots of the deities have this name, Vajra. If this Vajra of mine is the ultimate nature of reality, then why didn't Nagarjuna just say that right at the beginning? Well, the reason is that if he did, then the danger would be that we would take this to be truly existent. We would cling to it as being something. And so that's why first he uses logical reasonings to help us to understand how the true nature of reality is beyond all concepts of what it might be. And then to those skilled in the reasonings that prove this, then he teaches about the Vajra of mind. In short, when, according to the Vajrayana, when one realizes the true nature of mind, bliss, emptiness, then this realization of bliss emptiness cannot be diminished by anything. Nothing can make it decrease in the slightest. And furthermore, what we have to understand by putting both of these explanations together is that when it's called indestructible, that's the indestructible that's beyond the dependently existent concepts of destructible and indestructible. When it's called stable, it's the stability that's beyond the dependently existent concepts of stable and unstable. And so in a similar way, in the Gyulama, it's described as the genuine self beyond the fabrications of self and selflessness. And like this in the Vajrayana, one finds a great number of descriptions of the Vajra, the indestructible essence, the adamantine quality, and so forth. So this has been a brief explanation of the view of the Gyulama in connection with the view of the Vajrayana, together with the songs of realization of the Lord of Yogis Milarepa. So now, if there's time and you'd like to ask questions, then that's fine. And if not, then we can have question time at the end of the session on Monday. Pakwa Ludrupi Rite Tenma Pepe Tsu Pepe Pepe Tsu La Tenme Tenme Nenu Toksong Dendamu Rupachi
Rupachi De Tenme Tsu Dhamu
Tenme Kong Kongi Tenme Pena Mela Repaki Gong Mamu Gyalgo Tenme Papa Ludrupi De Le Loksu Rikpa La Tenme
Tambu rikpa la tende su san ke ne lo kene pa tsuba ka. Tene un kolo tomba ta doji te ju ta wala tende kone tomba ni ta ye. Na tende la.
Well, I can't say for sure how Nagarjuna realized the true nature of mind, but what he probably did was use logical reasonings during the stages of listening and reflecting to cut through all conceptual fabrications about the true nature of reality. And once he had done that and come to certainty that the true nature of reality is beyond concept, then he probably practiced the Vajrayana, learning the view of the third turning of the wheel of Dharma and bringing that into meditation involving Vajrayana practice.
In the Sudraji, he can only do a lion. The pay to pass the Sudraji now. Number Ja, he's from the Philip, young Sudraji.
Tripa Tampa Ja, Sudraji, and it's also possible to come to certainty by negating all conceptual fabrications of what the true nature of reality might be, and then just resting within that freedom from conceptual fabrication, and from within that original wisdom beyond conceptual fabrication will manifest. And Milarepa describes this too in his song called The Song of the Profound Definitive Meaning Sung on the Snowy Range. He describes the view from the perspective of the Prasangika Majjhimaka, the consequence school, as being the freedom from all conceptual fabrications, and meditation as, from the perspective of Shentong, being luminous clarity. And so describing the view he sings for the mind that masters view, the emptiness dawns. In the content seen, not even an atom exists. A seer and seen, refined until they're gone. This way of realizing view, it works quite well. And then describing meditation from the perspective of it being luminous, he sings, when meditation is clear light, river flow, there's no need to confine it to sessions and breaks. Meditator and object refined until they're gone, this heart bone of meditation, it beats quite well. First, one refutes all conceptual fabrications with a view, and then just rests, free from any concept of what the true nature of reality might be. And when one does that, then in meditation, luminous clarity beyond concept manifests.
Oh,
So now following the university tradition, you should take some notes and please write down these two verses. For the mind that masters view, the emptiness dawns. In the content seen, not even an atom exists. A seer and seen, refined until they're gone. This way of realizing view it works quite well. When meditation is clear light river flow, there is no need to confine it to sessions and breaks. Meditator and object refined until they're gone. This heart bone of meditation, it beats quite well. So now we should sing it. So I'll sing the first verse once to give you an idea of the melody, and then we can start over together from the beginning. And while we sing, we should meditate. The time for singing is the time for meditation. When you don't get distracted to outer objects, then outer things, then you can meditate and sing at the same time. For the mind that masters view, the emptiness dawns. In the content seen, not even an atom exists. A seer and seen, refined until they're gone. This way of realizing view, it works quite well. For the mind that masters view, the emptiness dawns. In the content seen, not even an atom exists. A seer and seen, refined until they're gone. This way of realizing view, it works quite well. When meditation is clear light river flow, there is no need to confine it to sessions and breaks. meditator and object, refined until they're gone. This hot bone of meditation, it beats quite well. The reason why we sing is that that's what Milarepa did. When he gave these teachings, he sang them. So when we sing them too, it sounds beautiful. And also when you sing, then you naturally speak the words slowly, so you have time to think about what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.